Masters and creatives to the World Builders Tavern. Today we are talking about the Studio Ghibli movie, Princess Mononoke. So consider yourself spoiler warned if you have not yet seen this film. With that, grab an ale, zero proof always available, and pull up a chair. I'm Emma, your friendly barkeep, along with Allison.
Hello.
And Christiana.
Hi.
And we are so happy to have you here. Cheers.
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 I have always said Ghibli, and now I'm second-guessing myself.
I specifically looked it up, and there doesn't seem to be a consensus on how to pronounce it, because it's an Italian word, but it's been adopted by a Japanese studio, so they say it differently than they would if it was like Italian, and then if you're English and you're trying to pronounce it. So it's just like, there's no correct way, really.
It's like a GIF or GIF.
Yeah.
Just do whatever you feel like.
So gotcha. I'm going to say Ghibli, but if you want to say Ghibli, or if you speak Japanese and can pronounce it in Japanese, or if you speak Italian and can pronounce it the way it is in Italian, go for it.
Cool.
But yes, so as I said in the description, Princess Mononoke is a Studio Ghibli film. You may well be familiar with this already, but if you are not, Studio Ghibli is a Japanese anime studio. Princess Mononoke was actually one of their first really big films, which is very cool. And this film is set in historic Japan. The movie opens with a village being attacked by a demon in the shape of a boar. The prince of the village is injured when he's defending from this demon, and his wound is found to be cursed because it has come in contact with the demon. The village wise woman discovers that a ball of iron lodged in the boar is what corrupted the forest spirit and turned it into this demonic force. She tells the prince that he has to travel to the west to break the curse and save the land, and he is actually banished from the village because of his curse.
So sad.
It's so sad. He journeys to Iron Town, a village that is also in conflict with spirits, and in fact, in more direct conflict. They have been clear-cutting the forest in order to make way to mine iron, and this has, of course, angered the forest spirits. The prince meets the titular Princess Mononoke, a human who has been raised by wolf spirits, and he gets swept into the conflict between humans and spirits, trying to broker peace between them.
It's interesting, she's only called Mononoke, like, once in the entire film, because her actual name is San.
Yes.
So I'm like, why did that? I don't know. It's interesting.
When I was looking this film up, interestingly, one of the founders of Studio Ghibli wanted to go with the Princess Mononoke title, and the other one wanted to call it something else. It was like the Legend of Ashitaka, which is the name of the prince, which I think would have made more sense because it really is more about him. It's kind of like when the Legend of Zelda, and then
that's exactly what my husband said when I was watching it, and he was like, "Oh, so its name is like Legend of Zelda," and I'm like, "Yep."
Yeah, so that's kind of, so it's interesting that is a thing, but
it's a cool name for
it is movie. I have not watched a lot of Studio Ghibli. I've watched two, and I've kind of watched half of another one. Anime's not my genre as much, but I liked this one. I thought it was cool.
I love anime, and Princess Mononoke isn't even in my top three Ghibli films, but I know a lot of anime fans also love it. So
this is one of the ones that's always is always like really high up on people's lists, I find.
Yes, lots of people love this one. It's not, I don't know why, I Spirited Away is my favorite.
That's one of the ones that I've seen.
Christiana and Emma wanted Mononoke, so that's the one we had to watch.
It's just because Spirited Away has been analyzed to death. It's so popular.
Yeah, and it's
so
very popular.
Also, I didn't really like Spirited Away, and I was afraid to talk about it.
Yeah,
people would be mad at me.
Emma, we're putting you on the spot. Why did you not like the fan favorite Spirited Away?
Or that's an answer. That's a question we can answer in After Hours.
For After Hours.
We'll go into
the safety of our patrons.
I also think Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away has maybe a little bit deeper world building in the sense of the amount of creatures and gods and spirits and all these people that are included. Princess Mononoke has deeper world building in the sense of going back in history to actual 1400s, correct? I think around that time, 1400s Japan, and kind of the systems that existed then on top of these fantasy elements and the idea of kind of corruption and gods and things. I think it's the world building is just a little more subtle, but also a little more in depth at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I think what I love about Studio Ghibli is that it does a really good job of being very weird, especially yes. for a North American audience, without losing the audience. Because lots of times, for me, when things are so weird, I'm just like, I don't understand this. I'm out, right? Like, it makes no sense. And this, a lot of things did not make sense. Particularly, a little bit more in Spirited Away than in Mononoke.
Yeah, but even I was going to say, I think Mononoke is one of the more normal, quote unquote.
There's still a lot of stuff in there that's like, why? I don't know. But it's still so captivating, and it just makes you think about the characters more than the world building, even though the world building is really weird.
Mm-hmm.
Or the world building being weird forces you to think more about the characters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm
But also the world building is like, I'm going to love anything that's anti-capitalism.
Yes.
And Princess Mononoke is so anti-capitalism. And so like, I really love it. And like, even the fact that when this movie was released, like, I don't think clear cutting was like a very common concept in political spaces, like the concept of like clear cutting forests and improper forest management and like ecological values and things like that. But they were still like, this is a problem. Like, this is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to deal with it? But in a fantastical way. And I think Princess Mononoke is like just like one of those A+ hard to beat examples of how a fantasy world can tackle real world issues and have commentary and have something to say about it while still feeling like a fantasy.
Because
sometimes it feels too thinly veiled where you're kind of like, yeah, we get it. This is all an allegory. This still feels like very much its own world and very much its own reality and its own story, but very easily applicable to what's happening in the real world today.
Mm-hmm. It's also very obvious what the movie is saying about the ecological themes. At the same time, they don't shove morals down your throat.
Yeah.
Like, you're still encouraged to be really thoughtful. And like the what's her name, Lady Eboshi is such an interesting character, and you can see why she's doing what she's doing. Like, she's doing good stuff. She's trying to protect like women and lepers and give them jobs and support people.
She's the leader of Iron Town, for anybody who hasn't seen the film.
But she's also ruining the forest and wants to kill the forest spirit. And so it's like these gray areas that force you to really think about these
things. It's definitely one of those, like, it also was giving, it's a little bit less, I think, black and white than like the Ents and Saruman in Lord of the Rings. I feel like that is even a little bit more heavy handed of like, no, this is absolutely bad. I think Princess Mononoke makes a little bit more gray, but it's definitely that like environment versus industry theme that I think is really powerful. And
but I think it's also like I feel like it doesn't come away with like one specific moral aside from like, be mindful of the communities that you're in.
Yeah.
But in both aspects, right? Like, I think that's why this one is so interesting to me, is because like, the lady is just doing what's best for her people, the people directly in front of her, right?
And also,
that's at the detriment of the forest, and that's a bad thing, but it doesn't necessarily mean she is 100% evil. I want to kill the forest spirit just for the sake of killing the forest spirit. She's like, I'm trying to take care of people. I'm trying to do my own thing, right? And like, I think they do it. That's what I mean when I say, I think it's like, it's really interesting. It's genuinely very interesting for its kind of commentary, because you're right. None of it is directly in your face.
It's also interesting that Ashitaka does not take a side. Like, I would kind of expect him to take the forest side and try and kill Lady Eboshi, you know? But the movie instead has him constantly being like, can't we live in peace with each other?
Yeah.
Can't we be at peace, and everyone hates him for it, which is really neat.
And even the ending is left kind of ambiguous. Like, they're kind of left at a point where it's like, okay, maybe we can come together and like negotiate, but there's not really like neither side like is vanquished, neither captain is killed. It's just kind of like, okay, now we have space and maybe we can come together and talk, but like, there's no victory for anybody,
which I think is like the subtle message of like, we need to understand that these things operate together, right? Like mm-hmm. humanity exists, society exists. We need to find a way to do that in equilibrium and,
yeah.
and with peace within the natural environment around us. And like,
yeah.
it's about balance and all things.
Yeah, I really and that like there aren't that, yeah. winners. Like,
yeah, there's
really,
no winner.
It's we're just all, trying to survive. We're all, I mean, yeah. in this case, they were almost all losers because
yeah.
So many people died and spirits died fighting this yeah. battle, and then nothing really resolved afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's also like realistic though.
Yes,
too, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's why I love it so yeah. much, is because it like, unfortunately, that's the way the world is often. Uh-huh. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Since you've already brought it up a little bit, I wanted to talk about the three-dimensional characters, especially particularly Lady Eboshi, because I think that she is so well done, and especially because she's a villain and especially because she's a female character, both of which are characters that often are just made very two-dimensional, and mm-hmm. she was almost the most three-dimensional character, like even more so than
I think
like,
so, yeah.
any
yeah.
of our protagonists, yeah. because yeah, she's the head of the, you know, Iron Town, which is decimating the forest. So you could expect, oh, well, she's just evil. But she's not. She's seen to be caring for the women, like, in the town. It's said that, you know, she's gone to the cities and collected women who worked in brothels and, like, given them an opportunity to come do different work here if they want. And the women all seem to be very excited about that. She also cares for lepers. And those things also seem really good. But then there's also, like, a twist to that where it's like, yes, she's helping them, but also... she's making the lepers work for her, and they work really yeah. long hours. The women work for her. They work really long, hard jobs, and they say, well, it's better than working in the brothel, but it's like,
yeah.
is exploiting is somebody yeah. by giving them a slightly better yeah. job than they had before? Like, so there's
they
just like, it's
something
like depth
like
on depth.
The woman said that their shifts were 4 days long or something, yeah. and I'm like without sleep? Or uh-huh. like, how does that work? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like,
but it's also interesting that we have this invisible force that we never actually see in Lord Asano, who is this samurai landlord who wants to conquer Iron Town.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's oppressing Lady Eboshi, which also makes her more three-dimensional because she's not just this evil,
it's
all-powerful character.
Goes yeah. down to the landlords being
Yes.
Land yeah. space lord, not landlord.
They're related.
Yeah.
Yeah, same,
lord
same
of the land. Yeah. Yeah. So like, and there's also like a reason for why she has to decimate the forest. Like if she doesn't
yeah.
use iron, they will literally be conquered. Like it's not
yep.
just a greed thing. And you do see it. She's like, oh, we're going to be super wealthy. But it's like a product of that wealth is being able to defend yourself against other people. So yeah, it's all very complex.
Also, side note, I had to look this up because I recognized her voice and couldn't figure out who it was. The English voice actor is Minnie Driver, who I love. So
really?
That was really fun.
And Claire Danes is
yeah,
Princess Mononoke. Yeah.
yeah.
Or sorry, yeah, this yeah.
same character.
Same yeah. Yeah, yeah, they had some really good voice actors for this
awesome.
One. I mean
yeah. Yeah. They usually do in the
they usually
the
yeah I was gonna movies. Say like not
yeah.
just for this one, but like they definitely the cast were. Which also I also really loved the use of sound in this mm-hmm. film, like
oh.
the way that they spoke was really clear and really crisp, which like I think is a thing in animated films in general, because you're doing more of that, like I mean even in live action though, like, you do VDR and like voiceovers, but like the sound really enunciated. The sound in the background I feel like was never in the background, it was like just as loud, like if someone was pouring water, it was like that was the main focus, it wasn't ever like background noise, it was like
oh I didn't know notice that, that's cool.
Yeah, which I felt was like I felt like it was a very like time specific thing, because it was very reminiscent of some other like movies of that time, like The Last Unicorn or even like
yeah.
Peter and the Wolf, like it kind of reminded me of those a lot. But then also I think it's just a way of like really drawing you into the world and showing that like it's just like a slower way of making a story almost, because it's not like
yeah.
you have people constantly
the environmental
talking.
Feeling of it, right? Like I think that's something that Studio Ghibli does really great. One thing that I'm gonna point out, it's not from this movie but from Ponyo, when she makes ramen for them. And the way the ramen looks, I distinctly remember
I've seen
watching
that clip.
It when
I haven't seen the film. I've
like,
seen that clip online.
Oh my God, I need it. I want it.
Oh my gosh.
Like a lifelong
anime
obsession.
Food
yeah.
is looks so good. Looks so good. I just want to eat it all.
But on the flip side, the design of the demon, especially in the beginning with the boar, like the little like wormies
and the squelching noise,
so creepy.
I
hated it.
So it's so good. I hate it so much.
Yeah. Or the forest spirits. They're like these little tiny doll things, and they make like clicking noises.
Yeah, the clicking noise is so weird.
It's like 100 little like clickies happening instead of bird song, which is just so, it gives you the sense of like, oh, this is a weird forest.
There's
like, this
something
is so otherworldly.
But it sounds like insects almost.
Yes.
Which, as someone who's like terrified of spiders,
immediately. Don't say that.
Do you want me to ruin something for you guys?
No, I don't.
You know, sometimes when you're walking in the fields of Manitoba at night, this is me being a farm kid from Manitoba, sometimes you hear like, almost like a little cricket noise, like a k-k-k. Those are spiders.
No!
Yeah, ruining your life one day at a time.
No!
But yeah, the little forest spirits, like they sound unnatural, but still natural. Yeah, the sound design is really, really good.
Okay, speaking of something else creepy, I want to ask your opinion on this. So there's the forest spirit that everyone's trying to kill in this movie. Also called the Nightwalker. You catch a glimpse of it at first, and it's like this beautiful, majestic deer creature with giant horns and stuff. And then it looks at Ashitaka at one point, and it's got this human face, and it creeps me out so much. And it really was like a juxtaposition of, I want this creature to be good and majestic and beautiful, and it wasn't, which made me automatically think, is this creature actually good? And then I wasn't sure. What did you think of that?
I feel like it was a representation of the impacts of humans on the forest. Right? Like, if the forest, and this is also just me being like a little woo-woo and but it's like, if this is the forest spirit, would it not be impacted by the actions that are happening in the forest? So maybe at first it's all natural and all very non-human and elegant and all these wonderful things are happening, but that it's being affected. The spirit would be affected by the actions in the forest, and it turns
that's
around
interesting.
It has that kind of human face.
But we don't know for sure, because we don't know what it looked like before the humans.
Yeah, exactly. It. That's the way I kind of interpreted it.
Yeah.
Watching it back now as it like, an adult who does too much media analysis. I was like, there's something deeper. But yeah, I think it's kind of like that I don't want to say scarring, but like in a sense, like that kind of being shaped by the environment that it's becoming. So
I think I definitely like thought it was unsettling. I took it more as like the like wildness or power of nature, kind of thinking of like in Narnia when Aslan's like, he's not a tame lion, like he's a good lion, but you should still be afraid of him because he's a lion. And it's kind of like that. It's like, yeah, these spirits may be, I mean, I guess we don't even know if they're quote unquote good. They just
I don't
are,
think it
right?
is
like
good.
That's
are.
The
yeah.
that's the thing, is just like nature exists and nature has a right to exist, but nature doesn't have to earn that by being beautiful and majestic
nature
and something that we're comfortable with.
Yeah, nature doesn't prescribe to human morals.
Yeah,
I think is
and
the
like
thing, right,
this
where it's
thing
like
is
a
horrible
hurricane.
And powerful, and like that's just what it is. That's like the nature of
because
this creature.
There's a point where it heals Ashitaka, and then a bunch of boar spirits come and have a conversation and are like, "Why didn't it heal our boar friend who died?" And why is it? And there's just no answer. Like, you never get an answer to that. You don't know why it killed
someone
and killed another one.
It's like a very conscious thing, because that's what nature is like, right?
Exactly.
Like, there's no rhyme or reason for it, but there is like a scientific explanation as to why a tornado happens.
Yeah.
But the tornado is not choosing its path.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, nature happens.
At the end, it kills the giant wolf Moro, the wolf goddess, and the giant boar, the white boar, it, like kind of in a peaceful death, but it's like it seems like it had the power to revive them and heal them, but it kills them instead. So like, why, we don't know.
I mean, and it was said to be the god of life and death, right? So it's also that thing of like, humans, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, but humans are really uncomfortable with death, but nature isn't. Like, life and death are both part of nature, and, like, death is just as important and just as good for nature as life is, and so death isn't necessarily a bad thing in the ecosystem, so maybe killing them and giving them life, maybe the spirit sees it as the same thing. It's like, this is just...
Well, and again, we're prescribing human morals to a thing that exists outside of it, right? Yeah. Like, I think that's what I... Another thing that I really like about this movie is, like, we don't need a reason. That's not how nature operates. Nature does not operate on the same morals as us. It does not operate even on the same plane as us, right? And so I kind of like that, and I think it's, like, a meaningful exploration of our relationship with the environment that we live in, where it's like, yes, it giveth and it taketh away. There's no, like, we don't really get to say when or where or why. So
Ali, I know that you had some thoughts about the society and culture that were shown in the movie. Did you want to talk to us about that?
Yes, I liked how this world felt real because of just little things that Ashitaka encounters. So in Iron Town, you have different gender roles for the women and the men. They're obviously treated differently, and you kind of see the men or the women making fun of the men sometimes, and it obviously being sort of refreshing that they get to do that, because it's made clear that they were oppressed before this. And that they worked in brothels and stuff. And so it's kind of like, yeah, we can, they don't touch us, you know, unless we want them to, kind of thing. And so just like those little details that don't actually impact the main crux of the story, but make this world feel real and historical as well.
There was a little touch that I liked, which there's never really explained as to why, unless it's a thing where I'm ignorant of it in Japanese history, but people didn't, in the original village, nobody wore shoes, like, even when they were, like, running around on the road. Like, that was one of the first things I noticed, is that the prince was not wearing shoes, and he's, like, clambering around, and then they, like, and then the boar's attacking, and these girls, like, running away, and none of them are wearing shoes, and I'm just like, oh, that's, like, a fun, and, like, it's not a thing, like, nobody talks about it. There's no reason why anybody would be like, we don't wear shoes because blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, oh, that's just, like, a fun thing that makes it feel lived in, is just these details that are...
Yeah, I wonder if that's something to do with poverty. Like, it seems like it was a poor village. Maybe they just don't have shoes, or I don't know.
It could, but I feel like most societies around the world have figured out how to make some sort of shoe. Like, you know, even if it's not, because, like, they're clearly, like, hunters and stuff, I think, so, like, leather or whatever. So, like, I think they probably could have shoes if they wanted to, but I just thought that was, like, a fun, just,
Neat.
I also really love the design of the fantasy creatures. The fact that he rides, like, an elk. And I think
I loved his elk so much.
Oh, my goodness. In the beginning, they're running away from the boar on the elk. And I literally turned to Connor and I was like, if this elk dies, I'm turning off this movie. I don't care if it's for the podcast. I will not watch. So, spoilers.
I can challenge you. I don't think that's an elk. Is it not an antelope?
They say, they call it a red elk. So, I mean, it looks more like an antelope. But in the show, they call it a red elk. So, I don't know.
In the show's world, it might not be a...
Okay. It could also be like Europe.
I missed
where
that because I just saw it and I was like, antelope. Okay. Yeah. Moving on.
There's a point where it's standing frozen in fear as the demon approaches it. And I'm like, oh no.
The arrow. Yeah.
And then I was like, oh good. The elk's going to survive.
Yeah. And then, well, then he takes out his bow and he shoots an arrow. And I was wondering if he was going to, like, if it was a mercy killing.
Mercy
like,
killing.
The demon's
not
going to kill my deer, but he just shoots an arrow next to the deer so that the deer will
to
run
scare
away.
It
and I was
away.
Like, oh.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. Even that, I think, is a nice little twist just to show you're not in actual history. It's like, you're not riding a horse, you're riding a deer. Cool. We know
you're
that
riding
we're in a non-
some form of non-domesticated ungulate.
Also, I love giant wolves, so I'm totally
good
with that.
Yeah.
Oh, they were amazing.
Yeah.
Even the giant, I love pigs also, so I felt really sad. The boars were more like antagonists than anything else. And I was
but
like, oh, the poor piggies.
The white boar had eye gook that I just could not look away from. It was so gross. I was like, no, I just want to wipe it off your eyes. Poor old boar.
Poor boar.
Yeah.
Hey, World Builders, it's Christiana. Did you know that the World Builders Tavern has a Patreon? True story. You can help us keep the lights on and listen to our bonus After Hours episodes. If you want to hear all of us get a little unhinged, join our Patreon. So you can join us at patreon.com/worldbuilderstavern.
All right, so I think that's a good time to toss to Proprietor's Pick. So, Allie, what do you got for us today?
I have picked a fantasy novel called God Killer.
Ooh.
Came out January of 2023, so pretty new if you're listening to this in a timely fashion. And it is about Kisin's family were killed by zealots of a fire god. Now she makes a living killing gods and enjoys it. That is, until she finds a god she cannot kill. Skeedy, a god of white lies, has somehow bound himself to a young noble and they are both on the run from unknown assassins. Joined by a disillusioned knight on a secret quest, they must travel to the ruined city of Blenraiden, where the last of the wild gods reside, to each beg a favor. Pursued by demons and in the midst of burgeoning civil war, they will all face a reckoning. Something is rotting at the heart of their world, and only they can be the ones to stop it.
That sounds really cool.
I love the idea of a god of white lies.
Me too! Immediately when I read that, I was like, cool. I'm imagining like sort of a low-key trickster humorous kind of,
yeah,
but I don't know. I have like, no idea.
It's not really a lie.
Yeah.
It's really gonna hurt anyone kind of thing. Yeah, I love that.
I love pantheons of gods where it's kind of like Greek gods, where it's like they're much more human, which is what this sounds like, because you can like kill them and stuff like that. That's always like a fun twist on like deities. So,
If you like the god aspect, the war, the killing gods, the part of Princess Mononoke, and the demons, you might like God Killer.
Like the God Killer, that's just the most metal.
That is a great title.
Oh, you should also look at the cover because it is so gorgeous.
Is that the one with the deer on the front?
It's got a deer on the front.
That one's been on my list, and half of the reason I put it on my list was because of the title. I don't even think I knew the synopsis because I did not recognize it.
You're like, God Killer? Sign up.
Yeah, it's got this gorgeous deer with big antlers and a moon in the background on the cover. It's very pretty. So.
That's awesome. Amazing. I only buy, I take out most of my books from the library, and then I only buy the ones that are like 10 stars or 10 out of 10. So I'm really hoping that this one is, because I want it because it's pretty. So like this one had better be 5 stars. With that, we are at last call. So listeners, we have some concluding questions and thoughts for you about what we can learn from the world building of Studio Ghibli. Allie, do you want to kick us off? What do you think we can learn from Princess Mononoke?
I think you should think about how you can ask questions without being direct about it, but ask questions through the world building. So for example, in Princess Mononoke, the question is, how can we coexist with nature? But no one really outright says that. It's just implied. And so one way you can do this is sometimes when you write, you might have characters actually talking about this stuff. And you can think, okay, this is a really obvious conversation. Maybe I could take that out and just have the theme coming through the world building instead.
Very good.
Yeah.
I feel like mine's kind of connected.
Ooh.
And it's good.
We love it.
Even if you have a world that is very different and very separate from the world that we're actively living in, how can you make that connection? Right? Princess Mononoke is about gods and is about demons and infection and things like that. But it is ultimately about how can we balance our existence with nature, right? Mm-hmm. So there are ways to take these very supernatural, very fantasy or sci-fi elements. And how can you make it kind of be a commentary on the real world without it being like very in your face, like, see, this person is bad. Everyone's bad.
The moral of the fairy tale.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the moral doesn't always have to be a, and then this happened and everyone lived happily ever after. Sometimes the world building can be that tool to cause people to question their own relationships, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be an in-your-face lesson. it could just be a vehicle for kind of questioning some of these systems. Totally. This is my way of saying, let's stop capitalism. Capitalism. But how can you do that subtly without me standing in the background chucking Molotov cocktails at
capitalism every, is the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am really just, the thing that keeps sticking out to me from this movie is like the soundscape. So I'm going to say my advice from this movie is to engage all of the senses of your audience. So if you are working in a visual format or an auditory format, then you have a little bit of more tools at your disposal because you can add things like sound. If you're doing a play, I guess you could add smells, which good or bad, could be weird. But but even if you're writing, you can use descriptions of those things. So I would say whenever you're describing something, try and use at least two senses. Like, how did the wood look and how did it feel or how did it smell? Like, you can make a world feel richer and more lived in if you incorporate more senses.
This is also something you can add in the editing phase, because when I'm first drafting, I usually always forget about senses other than visual, and that's always what I have. And then when I'm editing, I'll be like, okay, I gotta add in, you know, touch or smell or whatever. You don't have to have it all in your head at once.
Yes, yeah. But before you get to that last final finishing step, make sure
add
that there's
all
multiple,
the senses.
Yeah, yeah. Or even like if you're not trying to do that, try an exercise where you describe something without using visual, because that seems the main. Obviously, sight is a big part of how a lot of us interact with the world, so we tend to go for that first. But like, how would you describe a chair without talking about how it looks? How would you describe a room if you couldn't talk about how it looked? Right,
Descartes over here.
If you could only touch an elephant, how would you describe it?
I would say, but this is a tiny pet peeve, stop saying the copper tang of blood.
It's got to be like something else.
It's got to be like find another way to describe blood.
Oh, that's true.
But it tastes crunching. Like copper.
It does.
What else would you
like
to say?
You say like the smell of pennies filled my nose or something. Yeah, it's just always, I always hear the copper tang of blood in so many things. Specifically just copper tang. And I'm like,
Once you notice how many boots crunch on gravel,
that's what I mean.
You will
same
never.
Thing like, it's like copper tang, boots crunching.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I mean, they are evocative. So maybe, but maybe have one. You get one, and then you have to use a different description.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, that does bring us to closing time. We would love to stay longer, but these windows are not going to wash themselves. So thank you so much for joining us at the Tavern. If you just can't bear the thought of waiting 2 whole weeks for another episode, you should join us on Patreon. Patreon.com/WorldBuildersTavern, where you will get access to our bonus after-hours shows. Where you will hear me talking about why I don't like Spirited Away, and then send us angry comments about it. You can also connect with us on Twitter at WBTavernPod, on TikTok at WorldBuildersTavern, and on Discord, where we are the WorldBuilders Tavern. We hope to serve you here again soon, but until next time, scram.
Bye.
Get out of here.